Chapter 9, Immunity and Stress. It is easy to see how stress affects our breathing, our musculature, our heart, and our digestion. Stress makes us hyperventilate or hold our breath. It makes muscles contract and lock up. It increases heart rate and blood pressure. Even our digestive systems respond to stress in ways that are quite obvious to us. The immune system is far more complex. Its daily function is not obvious to us at all. Without deliberate study, we can't understand how it works. Its primary organs, the lymph glands, the thymus, the spleen, bones, and the skin are dispersed throughout the body. Its principal actors, the many kinds of white blood cells, operate in sophisticated ways with a large supporting cast of other biological agents. It has three major modes of combating pathogens, namely inflammation, innate immunity, and acquired immunity, and a few minor ones. It is typically fighting dozens of different battles on short or long time scales simultaneously. Because of this complexity, there is no single marker that can provide a standard global measurement for immune function. Most homeostatic systems in the body go through tension and relaxation cycles. After a fight or flight response, we can usually rest and recover. Our immune systems, however, have no such respite. There is never a normal resting state of immunity. Every minute of the day and night, our immune systems are in mortal combat with the billions of bacteria, viruses, fungi, and parasites that would love to colonize our bodies and raise their progeny. Since this battle starts at birth and finishes at death, homeostasis for the immune system is a manageable level of ongoing warfare. The immune system, like digestion, is expensive to maintain. B cells and T cells and the attack troops of the inflammatory response are part of a standing army that needs to be regenerated by the millions every day. The immune system is a war zone, hungry for cannon fodder. Immune reactions require the fine-tuned interaction of many players in a coordinated sequence over time. Because of this complexity, and because the many simultaneous battles compete for resources, immune function is very vulnerable to the interruptions, imbalances, and shortages of supply that go with stress. Here is a rough outline of how immunity works. The surface of the skin, respiratory tract, and the digestive tract, each with their own chemical weapons, form the first line of defense. If a pathogen breaks through these physical barriers, then inflammation, the second line of defense, comes into play to stop the spread. Inflammation, although uncomfortable, is vital for maintaining health. Capillaries swell to allow a speedy inflow of white blood cells, while heat and pain increase their effectiveness. In fact, many of the signs of inflammation, such as swollen glands, fever, fatigue, and pain, are the smoke and fire of the immune system at work, rather than the direct effect of the pathogen itself. Border guards attack the pathogen with suicidal vigor. Their dead bodies are a large component of what makes pus. These small white blood cells try to hold the line until the macrophages, the so-called big eaters, can get there in force. Since this can take a day or so, a pathogen always has the advantage of surprise. If the defense forces are too weak, or too late in arriving, a pathogen can breach the defenses, establish a beachhead in the bloodstream, and multiply within the first few hours. This is where the next line of defense, namely adaptive or blood-borne immunity, comes into play. B cells and T cells, each of which come in several types, are born in the marrow of long bones. B cells mature in the hundreds of lymph glands and wait there as virgin cells until they are needed. T cells mature in the thymus, a small organ that hangs off the windpipe just above the heart. These cruise the bloodstream in the form of helper T cells. Any macrophage that has devoured a pathogen will display telltale markers on its surface. These markers alert a helper cell and tell it exactly what the macrophage has eaten. This now activated T cell will search the lymph glands until it finds the one absolutely unique B cell amongst the waiting millions that fit that particular pathogen, and it activates her. This virgin B cell now becomes pregnant and produces millions of daughter cells. She has met her destiny and becomes virtually immortal. All her virgin sisters, on the other hand, the ones that don't meet their specific pathogens, will die within days and have to be replenished at great cost until the ends of our lives. The daughter T cells now produce massive quantities of the antibody specific to that pathogen. These pour into the bloodstream and stick into any of the pathogens they find. The antibodies don't actually kill the pathogen, but they act as flags and handles for the agents that do. An array of up to 20 blood proteins called complement now latches onto the pathogen. In a cascading process, they will build a cannon to shoot a bullet into it. Alternatively, a roaming macrophage will use the antibody to hold onto the pathogen while it devours it. This entire process is accelerated by cytokines, such as interleukin and interferon, which can be regarded as the regulatory hormones of the immune system. Like any hormone, they are very powerful. They also communicate directly with the hypothalamus, the brain organ which orchestrates the stress response, and immune function is easily disturbed by their being either overactive or underactive. It takes about 3 to 6 days to mount a full immunological attack from scratch, but the body then remembers the face of its enemy. T and B memory cells are born specific to that pathogen, and they stay on guard for a future appearance. The next time they meet, the immune system responds so quickly that the pathogen barely gets started and we hardly feel sick at all. If, however, a pathogen manages to escape from its attackers and lodge within the cells of the body, then the last line of defense comes into play. Diseased or cancerous cells post messages on their cell walls that inform killer T cells circulating in the blood of their fate. These T cells now kill the viruses by a scorched earth policy. They can't attack the virus directly, so they destroy the cells that they inhabit by a process called apoptosis. Every one of our cells has a mechanism that allows it to self-destruct. The T cells now persuade the disease cells to commit suicide for the greater good. A healthy immune system can cope with almost anything. It knocks off cancer cells on a daily basis before they can get a foothold. All our lives we are constantly exposed to deadly pathogens without getting seriously ill. In fact, an immune system, particularly in childhood, needs to be constantly assaulted to develop its characteristic strength and versatility. But if the balance tips just slightly, perhaps during a few days of high stress, the results can be disastrous. The immune system routinely destroys precancerous cells. If it is stretched thin, however, some cells may survive, and once they get a chance, they can multiply very rapidly. The immune system's war of attrition is expensive and exhausting, and as the years go by, it functions less and less efficiently. Young people rarely die of pneumonia, but it is a common terminal illness for the elderly. You could say they die not from pneumonia, but from the effects of an exhausted immune system. Commonly in the battle, neither the immune system nor the pathogen wins outright. Instead, we live with a degree of persistent low-level hostility that makes us feel not quite sick, but not quite well either. Our digestive systems and respiratory tracts are quite likely to be in a continual state of mild inflammation because of their daily exposure to pathogens. So, how does stress affect immunity? The short answer is that cortisol suppresses inflammation. Although inflammation is our crucial first line of defense against disease, it also needs to be wound back or down-regulated whenever possible. Inflammation is like a rampaging army. It kills the enemy, but it also causes collateral damage to healthy cells. Cortisol particularly suppresses the cytokines, the hormones of the immune system that stimulate the inflammatory response. When we are stressed, however, it does its job too well. Psychological stress through the agency of cortisol destabilizes immune function, just as an overload of calories affects diabetes. Our immune system is prone to paranoia. It frequently mistakes friends for enemies. Immune system overreactivity contributes to allergies, chronic infections, poor wound healing, irritable bowel syndrome, hepatitis B, arthritis, and other autoimmune diseases. In recent years, researchers have found that inflammatory imbalances also play a role in cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, and the cognitive and functional declines associated with aging. Since 1980, the new science of psychoneuroimmunology has investigated the interaction of mental states and the nervous and immune systems. It regards the brain and the immune system as a single integrated system of defense, and it argues that emotional states can enhance or inhibit the body's capacity to defend itself from illness. Researchers in this field typically expose subjects to stressors and measure the effect on immune markers in the blood or saliva. Alternatively, they examine people they assume to be stressed, such as those who are bereaved, disadvantaged, or caring for others, and compare them with people who don't face those stressors. Typical results are that stress results in decreases in the numbers of all kinds of white blood cells and their supporting factors. It leads to a susceptibility to viral and bacterial infections, to poor wound healing and post-operative recovery, and to high resting levels of cortisol. Chronic stress even has a visible effect on the immune system over time. The thymus gland, where T cells come to maturity, will shrink. The lymph glands, crucial for B cell production and the site of most of the biggest battles against disease, will also atrophy. So, what can we do to help our immune function if we are sick? Immunity, like digestion, only works well when we are relaxed during the day or asleep at night. It actually peaks at night, thus operating on a daily cycle, which is the exact opposite of the cortisol cycle. This is why it is natural for sick people to rest a lot, and why it is risky to keep pushing on if you are seriously ill. Meditation trains us to be comfortable in uncomfortable situations. We can be tense if we are ill or in pain, or we can be relaxed. Meditation can help us physically relax and learn to tolerate discomfort better. Pain will still be painful, but it doesn't help to tense up against it. People with cancer are often encouraged to fight their illness and praised when they do so. This fight metaphor can have some value in a moral context. It usually means the person hasn't given up, is still hopeful, and is doing everything possible. Unfortunately, the word fight is the wrong word to use in relation to the body. Fight suggests a high energy state and a grim-jawed vigilance. In fact, the muscular demands of a fight or flight response actually drain resources away from immunity. Our bodies are in the optimal healing zone when they are relaxed. The best way to help our immune systems is to get good quality sleep and to de-stress and relax as much as we can during the day. We've now come to the end of this book, so where do you go from here? You can learn at home by using my set of guided CDs called How to Meditate. These will walk you through all the exercises that I do in my basic course. If you want to understand meditation more thoroughly and learn how to evaluate and improve your practice, you could use my talking book, Focusing and Awareness. If you want to integrate meditation into your day, you could use my book, The 5-Minute Meditator, which presents 42 highly practical spot meditations. There are also extra articles and resources available on the website. If you want to know more about how meditation could help in your situation, you could have a personal consultation or a phone consultation. If you feel that meditation could be important for your health, don't underestimate your need for support. If you can, go to a local class, even if it has a more spiritual orientation than you would like. The weekly discipline and encouragement can make all the difference. Meditation is pleasant and easy to do, but it does take repetition and time to consolidate.